every single person in a country, in a nation, has a commitment to the guests that come to visit and to really show them what their local culture is all about and deliver it in such a way that they also would encourage you to come back as a visitor. Does tourism really broaden the mind? It certainly does. I think of it as a form of education. I think that people are constantly looking to learn new things. And so whether it's a culture, a language, how to cook, these are things that people really are active in pursuing. And so we need to be able to deliver it to them.
Hi, my name is Neda Badran, and I'm the founder of a cultural experiences company in the United Arab Emirates, aiming to show visitors what the city is like from a very, very different perspective, and definitely beyond the malls and the very tall skyscrapers.
Oh my goodness, Neda, it's so nice to see you. I mean, like, just to be able to hear your voice face-to-face versus the videos. Hello, my friend, hello.
Hi. Oh my God, no, like I said, it's great to speak to you too. I mean, we're time zones away, but it's just such a nice thing to be able to do this and speak via Zoom.
You know what? I have been, so everyone knows, I met Neda when I was in Dubai. A mutual friend introduced us. A mutual friend that lives in my town actually introduced us. And sitting down and having a conversation with you, and I was just like so in awe of you. I was so inspired of you. And you are just a whippersnapper. You just do so many things. So I want people to get to know who you are. And then we're going to go deep into what happened to you during the pandemic. So I want to actually, like, I want people to learn, where did you come from? Who are you? Like, tell me your story.
Sure. So I've actually grown up here in the UAE. So that's the United Arab Emirates for short. And have been living here in Dubai now for roughly about 20 plus years. Growing up here has just been amazing because you get to see the changes that you're probably hearing about, or, you know, either on the TV or everywhere else, live in person. So with that being said, I mean, I grew up when there was just one mall that was open here in the city, which is almost, you know, crazy to imagine in this day and age. And so it's just been amazing to just be a part of those changes and to contribute to them as well. So with that being said, I mean, I have a lot of friends, family that visit from out of town, and they would always come here and, you know, they'd do the bucket list itinerary, right? They'd go to the big tall towers, they'd go to the big malls, but they would just, you know, come to me at the end of the day, we'd be having dinner, and they'd just say, oh, you know, so we did this, we saw that, what else can we do? We feel like we're maybe a bit lost or a bit bored. So I would like come up with these lists of itineraries and things to do, but I realized that it was very difficult for them to actually do them. They might have not, you know, known where the places were located, needed maybe to drive there themselves. So I realized that there was a big, gigantic gap here in the tourism market where you actually don't feel like you've maybe interacted with the locals. And the beautiful part about this, you know, city or the country as a whole is that it is so diverse. And you've had people who have lived here their entire lives who are just dying to share their stories. So it was just a matter of like bridging the gap and putting the two of us together. So that's how the company was founded. And the name of my company is Wander With Tours. And so I offer cultural experiences for visitors from outside of the country or even the domestic markets here, who want to go a little outside their comfort zone and really get, you know, behind the buildings, get, you know, into maybe detail with some of the historical facts and just really have a very unique experience, right? Like any traveler would.
So tell me about, before we go into the company a little bit more, what, I mean, did you have an education in tourism? I mean, did you travel a lot? I mean, did your family infuse this into who you are? How is it that all of a sudden you picked up and you started to do this? It had to stem from something or someone.
Yeah, and I would say my background is actually a little interesting and maybe a little different because I was a finance undergrad major. I used to work in corporate banking, and then I actually did my MBA in Spain a few years ago. And I think maybe studying there had instilled in me that like spirit of entrepreneurship where I wanted to, you know, make something of my own, put together strategies in place and actually, you know, exercise them in full. And so with that being said, you know, coming back here, I saw that gap, right? Like I was saying, the gap that was missing and needed to be filled. And I thought, this is something that I can do, having known the place here so well. And I just started working into, you know, putting it together. It didn't happen overnight. That's one thing for sure. It took some time to put together because I did want to continue working until I was able to get everything in place. And so I was doing that, you know, at the same time. But the second everything was ready and good to go, I launched the company, and that was in 2016. And then just sort of, you know, worked exclusively on and on focusing on it, and bringing, you know, all the plans that I had in mind in place.
What was that conversation you had with your family when they said, wait a second, let me get this straight. We just like supported you going through all this like education. We've traveled around the world with you. We've given you every single resource in the world to succeed in a bigger picture. And then you decide to go on your own and become an entrepreneur. What was that conversation like at home?
Well, I think it's interesting because in terms of my family, I actually have a little bit of a family of entrepreneurs ourselves. Like, you know, my parents have corporate jobs, but my siblings do have an entrepreneurial spirit as well, and they've launched their own companies. And so that conversation actually wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. I think the harder part came was when I was having this talk with friends, friends who led those corporate lives, you know, did the 9-to-5 jobs, and they were just probably, I would say, maybe a bit concerned as to what would happen if I decided to go down that lane. And because they didn't have the experience themselves, I couldn't exactly, you know, go to them continuously for advice, right? So what I did instead was I surrounded myself with a crowd of people who were kind of moving down the same path, and then just, you know, had maybe a mentor or two lend their words of advice, and also of course their mistakes, just to be able to learn from them. Right. So I thought that was incredibly useful.
What was the hardest thing that you found with starting your own business? So at the beginning, you said that it wasn't, I mean, obviously for a lot of entrepreneurs, we know it doesn't happen overnight. Although the outside world thinks, oh, wow, she just like, it just popped out of nowhere. They don't know the stories that happened in the back end. But what was by far one of the most challenging parts for you trying to navigate this in a country that you know so well?
Well, I would honestly probably say getting my first customer, right? Because, you know, I just launched the company, but what now was happening was that I was an unknown in a world of many, right? And so to get, for instance, my listing just, you know, put up somewhere, whether it was on TripAdvisor or any of these other websites, I was, you know, very low in terms of rank compared to other or more established players. So really just to get heard or to get my first customer through the door, that was probably one of the hardest. And I sat probably for maybe a few months thinking, I must be doing something wrong, right? Like, why is no one responding to my ads or my, you know, my website, which looked all fantastic and all that. So it was really probably that. And then I realized the power of friends. So contacts. And so really just got a few friends to, you know, tell others about me, whether they had family or friends coming in. Mm-hmm. And then the word just slowly got around, you know, it got viral in a way, and then picked up on other channels, and the rest is really history.
I have to say that so I had been dying to go to Dubai before even got, it was just one of those places where when people ask me, like, I go, tell me what are your thoughts on Dubai? And I'm like, I go, Dubai is like my personality. It's large and it's alive. I go, everything about it is just so, I mean, the wow factor word isn't even, it doesn't even depict what it really, really is. And so you have individuals that are adventurous and they want to go and they want to see, they want to understand that. I mean, like, I remember that moment of flying in desert, and then just appears out of nowhere. And so a lot of people are that, where we're excited to go, we want to see this creation. And then there are people that have the fear of, oh my God, I don't want to go there. What if I can't? Like, I mean, like, they're not good into women. They're not this. I mean, the list of like, I'm afraid. How were you? I mean, tourism is literally the catapult for so many different countries. How were you able to get people to understand that there was so much more than just the wow, as well as so much more than the fear?
Well, you're right. I mean, it is difficult. And, you know, for a different type of traveler, I'm having to answer different kinds of questions. But I honestly think that the best way to do that is through educating them, right? So with every interaction that I have with a guest, a potential customer, I am trying to give them the maximum amount of information that makes them comfortable with their decision and then get them to sort of discover on their own as well. I have a lot of guests who will go back and just, you know, tell their friends and family, you guys have to go to United Arab Emirates, right? Like, people tend to think maybe that the Middle East is just one big place, right? And of course, because of some of the conflicts that happen in other areas, they do tend to worry, and you know, that's quite valid, but it is a very different situation on the ground. And you know, I've lived here, like I said, my entire life, and have traveled quite extensively throughout the region as well. And I would say that the media definitely at times portrays different things. And of course, it's mostly the big events that happen. So on the ground, a different story entirely. And so I think it's just a matter of educating people and just having them seeing it, you know, with their own eyes. And that's what it takes, really. That's how you convince them.
Now, when we met, we just sat down and we had tea and we just talked and talked and talked. I mean, like, it's hard. It's kind of funny to get two talkers together because it was just like not enough hours for us to talk. But when people are there, and I did, like, I mean, I did the undersea aquarium, which was mind-blowing. I did the tower, mind-blowing. I mean, like, again, everything mind-blowing in Dubai. Being at the beach, made-up, man-made beach where there's, like, signs saying, be careful for the jellies. I'm like, but it's man-made. What do you mean there's real jellies in this man-made? Like, it's surreal. What are the things that you would take us in a different direction? So there's definitely the tourist drops, but what are a couple of the favorite things that you do with your guests that really catch them by surprise? And also, you don't have a staff, but you have so many partners. You have so many partners. How did you develop those partners being a newcomer? So two full questions.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll start maybe first with the staff, right? Because you're having to, first of all, find these locations, these destinations that you want to take your guests to, but you don't want them to be, of course, you know, places that are dirty or just not informative or not interesting, right? You want to take them to places where you know you'll get that wow or ooh factor from your guests. So first things first, you would have to definitely study the market, right? See who's out there, see who you think might match the quality that you're looking for. And that way you select them and hopefully are able to partner with them as well. So once I kind of did that, I was able to put together or curate these itineraries that I knew that people would like to see that were different from, like I said before, the skyscrapers or the big malls and stuff. So I would maybe perhaps take someone first on a journey in the old part of the city, right? Because I think that to understand any place, you have to first really get, you know, into its roots and try to maybe perhaps interact with the people and really just see it sort of naked in a way, right? See it where it's not polished and fancy and laminated. So you know, the way I kind of did that was just by going to the places that I've been visiting for so many years and just really taking people with me on like a trip where I was going to see my friends and talk to them and they would want to talk to them. So it almost didn't feel like it was work in that way, right? It felt natural and it just felt like it was something that was gonna, you know, be appealing to that customer once they would come.
So what are the, what's the feedback like where, especially from an individual that has probably never traveled, Dubai was probably their first trip, they find you, what's that reaction from the people that they're like, ah, this is something I've never experienced, or I don't know. Well, you tell me. I mean, I don't want to put words into your mouth.
Yeah, no. I honestly would say that all reviews, and I, you know, I'm not even, you know, making this up. This is something you can even find online. A lot of people that come, whether they're with me or with others, are shocked when they actually see the place when they're on the ground. You know, they'll write that, no, you actually don't need to cover up and you actually are able to walk around freely in the country without worrying or having, you know, to look back every now and then. They are very surprised that this country is actually one of the safest in the world. Mm-hmm. So some of the worries that you have when you're visiting or traveling to other places, they're almost non-existent here. Right? So I wouldn't say ignore them, but I would say you would definitely just feel a lot more comfortable when you're actually here than you would have thought maybe otherwise beforehand. So people, when they come, will sit and say, wow, like, okay, the malls are maybe something similar to what we have back home, but I never knew that the markets or the souks here, you know, had such cool stuff. And they would come with certain souvenirs that they had picked up, and they would just, you know, like to show it off to their friends back home. So all these small things, they add up, right? It's not just like one particular scenario. It's a collective thing.
You are absolutely right in regards to the safety. I remember there was like, I'm a walker, I'm a runner. I remember one day, it was in the middle of the day where instead of taking car, it was like within 2 or 3 miles of going from a mall or something. I just wanted to just walk and see. And a police officer stopped and he goes, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "But you're walking." And I'm like, "Are you not allowed to walk?" He goes, "No." He goes, "You don't, it's hot. It's hot. Don't walk." I go, "But I just want to check to see if you were okay." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I love you guys. You guys are so awesome." I go, "No, I just wanted to walk because I just wanted to see everything." He goes, "It's really hot. I want to make sure you're okay." And I'm like, "Oh, I love you." it was just one of those moments where it was just like something that I do so carelessly. And just like, I love to, wherever I go, I like to walk and see the place and just everyone. And it was the police officer. It was like a cab driver. Everyone was just checking to make sure, "Are you okay? Because we know you're a guest and we want to make sure that you're just okay." Safety is not a concern, but again, it's a very rare, it's like it's over 100 degrees and you're just walking, which is something that no one does.
Oh yeah. And you know, the second they see anyone walking in that kind of heat, they know that you're a foreigner or that you've just kind of started living in the country. So it's often the case, yes, in the summer that the temperature does go up significantly, and it's also super humid. And I, you know, I'm talking about right now, so the summer's not over yet. Hopefully it will be in a month's time. But you know, walking isn't something that people generally do in those months. They tend to leave it during the cooler months of the year. And so that's why like the industry itself then, as a result, is also seasonal. Right. So it's about 6 months of, you know, people pouring into the city or to the country, coming to visit and to enjoy the lovely temperatures and the beaches and stuff. And then you've got the other 6 months where it's, of course, a little less inviting. But it's something that I think like you have to just know how to manage. One thing that people tend to be surprised about when they come here is that Dubai is actually pretty big. You know, so is Abu Dhabi. You can't exactly get around by foot like you would maybe perhaps in New York or some other places. You would have to either rely on, you know, some form of transportation. Thankfully, we've got the metro, which is a fantastic way to get around the city, but it's more on the main highway. To get maybe into some of the other neighborhoods, you would need a car, but then you have things like Uber and all these other, you know, ride-sharing apps that are also available. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to really go through so much trouble. It's as modern as really any other big city in the world, and everything is in English, right? People actually, yeah, they tend to worry that, you know, "I'm coming here and I don't know how to speak Arabic." I can promise you, you will hear more English, I think, than you will back home if you're coming from an English-speaking country. You know, most of the people here are foreigners, are expats. That's actually roughly about 90% of Dubai's population, so it's a shockingly high number. And while they may not all speak English, they'll be able to at least have some sort of conversation to help you as a foreigner, right? So incredibly easy on that front.
Could you let me, as well as everyone else, know why is it that percentage so high? Why is it 90% expats that are in Dubai? Where, I mean, there it's the Middle East is such a large location, obviously, but why is it that it hasn't grown bigger, or I'm sorry, that 90% hasn't lessened?
So I would say, you know, a large number of the people that have come from outside are indeed, for instance, people that work in certain sectors like construction. So you have a lot of workers who tend to come from, you know, countries like you have India, you've got Pakistan, Bangladesh, and they do work in the construction industry or real estate. So a large, you know, percentage or chunk is due to that. But then you have so many others who come from other parts of the world for various reasons. But I would say a lot will come for things like job security or safety. Coming here, you have, of course, here a tax-free economy in the sense that you have no income tax. So a lot of people come here thinking, "Oh, we're going to save some money." And so they'll come and they'll maybe stay for a year or two. Sometimes that, you know, extends to 10. And so it just then becomes a comfortable home, right? So it's very attractive in that sense. And as a result, that's also attracted a lot of businesses to come and also set up shop here. So a lot of even multinational companies have set up their HQs here, you know, in the Middle East. And that is really also due to the country or the city's very strategic location, which is right, you know, between, you know, East and West, and just a few hours away for so many people.
How has this, I'm going to switch gears for a little bit. How has the pandemic changed the way that things are being done in the Middle East? Because obviously we see the world. I mean, like we are at, I call it, where everyone's like seeing the negative part. I'm calling it the world is on pause. We are on pause. But how has, because the Middle East is in the middle, there's a lot of corporate, and I saw that where like so many companies that are very familiar to me are right there. Very clear, big, beautiful buildings. A lot of their workers, international in every single way. But how has that affected the buildup of the Middle East? Because all attention started going there. Obviously, there was going to be the Dubai 2020, which was going to be this big, huge, massive highlight of welcome. We are here. We are open. We want this to be the place where everyone comes and meets. So what has changed now? Because of, literally in March when the pandemic started, the 6 months that has gone by, and what do you think the future will look like?
Sure. So a lot of things did come to a complete standstill. I mean, there's no arguing that certain businesses just simply could not operate. And of course, you had things like government restrictions in place that also prevented them from doing so. So what happened then was that a lot of companies just simply had to act fast and quick to just get back up and running. And they had to do that by migrating to online tools and other, you know, methodologies. So with that being said, there were probably a few months where business was probably stagnant. A lot of businesses suffered, especially the smaller mom and pop shops. Whereas the other bigger ones, didn't thrive, but, you know, were able to maybe sustain themselves for a little while longer. So it's definitely been very difficult. And, you know, I can't say that I've seen it all because I personally myself wasn't here at the time. And I'll get to that very soon. But with that, I think that many businesses were affected. There's no doubt. There was at some point a huge campaign to start supporting local, right? Because, you know, if you have so many businesses just about to completely evaporate, you would need to have, you know, maybe just even the one or two odd customers to still be able to maybe at least pay rent, right? So that campaign certainly helped, but I know that a lot of them also have left the market, right? So it's become a lot thinner in that sense. Yeah.
You said it best, and I think that this is what everyone else is doing as well, supporting local. You're moving so fast, it's easy to sit there and order things online, the convenience of it coming to your door, not realizing that your next door neighbor, the little bodega, the little shops have those items, and they've always had those items, but it's like you're just, again, moving so fast that now that we're at a pause, paying attention. What are the couple of things that you heard? And again, we're going to get back to the fact that I can't say that you saw, but what are the things that you heard about people supporting each other? Like, I mean, when you got back to Dubai, what did you see that was different in regards of, were there a lot of them gone or are they still there and they're thriving even better than before?
Yeah, actually driving by many of the roads here, I've already seen many places that I've grown up going to have completely shut down. There is no doubt. Many have gone and are likely not to return, right? So with that, I've also just kind of seen maybe also new ones popping up. I'm surprised that they have, but they may have gotten some sort of support, whether it's from, you know, their suppliers or the government. They seem to be able to at least open. So that's, you know, a good sign. It's a promising sign, but no idea how sustainable. So with that, I would say that there's probably perhaps a bit more of an optimistic outlook, at least for the next few months or the rest of the year, because things here seem to be getting back to normal, right? You're actually walking outside. There's the streets are busy. The people are outside. They're all in masks, but things are moving. So it's optimistic in that sense, but I would say it's a cautious optimism.
So now, of course, I have to start asking that question. So you're running your business. You travel all over the place. Please tell the world, please tell us what happened to you during this time, because I was blown away because I was so excited when you went on vacation. But then what happened after that, I was like constantly, I mean, it was literally like a soap opera where every day I was watching to see like what's going to happen next. So tell us what happened to you.
Yeah, no, definitely. Oh my God. I mean, the story itself still hasn't registered in my head yet either. In March, and this was earlier just this year, I went to New Zealand for a planned 2-week trip. And it was really just to support my sister who was having her first baby. And when I got there, things were okay. And, you know, there was obviously a little bit of concern because, you know, the news of many cases in other parts of the world were definitely always on the TVs, but you didn't really feel that sense of urgency just yet. So, I mean, I spent almost a week just going around the city, visiting different, you know, touristic sites and just really going about my day just like, you know, I would in any other time of the year. And then we hear some announcement that the Dubai International Airspace was closed. And this was similar to many other shutdowns around the world. So we're thinking, okay, this could be maybe a 1-week, 2-week thing, tops. You know, they're not going to extend it for too long, right? There are so many of us around the world who are abroad. But then New Zealand did the same thing. And they closed their airspace pretty much to everyone except for returning Kiwis and residents. So we were now kind of thinking, okay, this seems to be getting a little more serious, right? Like we've got both Dubai and New Zealand with closed airports. Let's just stay put. Again, waiting for also my sister to have her baby. So we weren't still panicky yet. But then 1 week became 2 weeks. And then those 2 weeks became a month. The month became two. And that pretty much went on for 6 entire months.
Believe it. I can't, I mean, I like literally, like, all right, how do you even deal with that? I mean, you are ready to go home. You have a business, you have things to do. You want to be home. And then this is happening. So what did you do for 1, the business, 2, keeping your sanity? And 3, it was great to be with your sister because your sister lives in New Zealand, correct?
Yeah, my sister, yeah, was there, and she was basically having her baby, and, you know, the whole setup was an Airbnb sort of situation where we had rented accommodation just to be closer to her in the hospital and stuff, but at some point we were like, okay, we can't leave, and we weren't even allowed to technically move houses in the middle of a lockdown, and so New Zealand shut down, like I said, its airspace, but then also went into what they call the level 4 lockdown, and that's like the strictest of lockdowns, where you're basically, you're not supposed to leave your house unless you're an essential business worker. And you're only able to go out to, you know, get groceries or any other essential items. But that was about it. Everyone had to stay inside, stay indoors, and it was for the safety of people. So you had to stay in what they called your own bubble. So we were a bubble of 4, or I like to say 4.5, including our newborn. And we were just basically waiting to see what was going to happen, right? And so it was, like I said, it was just maybe perhaps concerning in the very beginning, but then later it started becoming way more serious. And we all have jobs, right? So we were just thinking, how is this going to work? Everyone, of course, is working online, but is this going to work for us as well? We're in a different time zone entirely. Mm-hmm. As my friend likes to say, New Zealand is in the future, right? So we're, of course, you know, a few hours ahead. So we were basically just trying to adjust our schedules just to match work back home. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy to do when you're not in your own house, right? We're all living out of suitcases. We're at a rented space, so we also don't have our stuff. So it was truly, truly a test, right? A test of many things. One is sanity. patience is another. But really also it was a drain on so many other things, including, you know, financially, because we were having to pay costs for these rented apartments. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I mean, many, many emotions all at the same time, right? And it just seemed to drag on and drag on and drag on. And we were just not, you know, able to understand why or what was happening and when we would get back, right? Imagine someone would ask me, oh, so when are you going back home? My genuine answer then was, I don't know, right? So when the approvals finally came in, I swear to you, you would have thought that we were, you know, or that we just won the lottery or something like that. We were all screaming in the house and, you know, the baby was just looking at us thinking, what are these crazy people doing? But we had all gotten the approvals to get back. But then the next mission was, all right, let's find flights to get back home. And you'd be surprised. I mean, there might be flights running between countries, but they're much fewer. And there's also limited capacity on these flights. So they're not, you know, filling up all their seats. They're just, you know, putting certain percentages that they're willing to fill up until. So I, you know, probably started looking for my flight almost a month before I managed to get on one. Right. So it did take a long time, but then it finally did.
So now that you're back home, and yay, welcome home. Welcome home.
Thank you.
What does that mean for your company now? I mean, for 6 months you were overseas. You were definitely like the chronicles of being New Zealand, which is not a bad place to be, by the way.
Not at all.
Definitely not a bad place to be. I mean, I used to live in Australia, and I have to say, like, everyone's like, you never went to New Zealand. I'm like, I know. I have friends there. I've never been. Can't wait to go one day. But now you're back. How do you run your business? I mean, you drove by. You saw stores that didn't exist anymore. You are, and I mean, you're 4 or 5 years down the line. You have a great following, you're in tourism. I mean, what does this mean for you now, and what are your next steps?
Yeah, so of course I'm now in a very, very also different position than I was many years ago, right? This whole situation has disrupted the travel industry altogether, put it almost to a complete halt. So it's been really, really even difficult to imagine anything different now, right? Just because you go outside, you see everyone in masks, you see everyone trying to maintain a 2 meter social distance, and you're thinking, wow, how are we ever going to get back to, you know, visiting tourist sites and maybe even getting much closer to hear the guide speaking? Those are things that I think I won't be able to tell at this point in time. I think it's going to, of course, take certain things to start happening as well. You know, tourists first coming into the picture, because we don't have as many as, of course, we usually do. Perhaps when the summer ends as well, that might improve. But I think what it's going to take is a lot more effort from any business, not just anyone in the tourism, but any business altogether, to attract customers, right? And to also make them feel confident that you are taking care of them. Right? So that's a whole public relations strategy in itself. You need to be able to, you know, instill in them some sort of confidence that when they're here, they're going to be taken care of, and that you've already yourself checked and maybe perhaps vetted the suppliers and done some sort of quality control that they would themselves feel comfortable with. So it's a lot of those small things that you need to do as any business to be able to attract customers and hopefully get them in the doors at the same rate as they used to before. But for me, I think what will happen to a great extent will be a renewed focus on domestic tourism. And that's actually what New Zealand did, right? So New Zealand had shut its borders, but they themselves in the country were open to travel to other cities. So they started this whole campaign, which was do something new, New Zealand.
Come on, Aotearoa. Do something you've never done before. There's a place to explore.
Spoiler alert, it's that place she said before.
Oh, it's Aotearoa. Do something new, New Zealand. Hit the road this weekend. Visit that giant carrot, if that's your new thing.
Or climb a mountain and drink a Riesling.
Go see the glowworms and hit a cafe.
Shuck a bluff oyster and swim in a bay.
Jump on a horse and go for a trick.
Or maybe just do something inside, like go to a museum or a gallery.
Or visit the giant L&P bottle.
What is it with you and these giant things?
Do it.
Whoa. Do something new, New Zealand. Bypass the badge this weekend.
Walk that scenic trail to see where it ends.
Go for a spin.
Or find a new friend.
Pull up a hangy, then blow off some steam.
Go for a bike ride and eat an ice cream.
Walk down the river and stare at the stars.
Give the
minutes ago.
Try this or go here.
Blow this guy a kiss.
Have you heard about here?
North. If you normally go north, fly south, drive east.
Go west. Why don't we just stay here and have fish and chips?
Right? So if you had never gone bungee jumping before as a Kiwi, shame on you. Well, it's about time you get that, you know, done now. So I think that that's a campaign that would work also quite effectively here. And that's really also because a lot of the residents here, like I said before, are actually expats who are from outside the country. They may have been here for 20 years, but they also could have just been here for a year or two. So you now have to have sort of like a renewed focus on them. Using, for instance, again, sort of that phrase, do something you Dubaians or UAEans to get them to perhaps rediscover their home, you know, their land. And that would probably, again, entail some sort of education. So it's a very kind of, I'd say, mixed number of attempts. It's not just one thing. It's going to involve that. There's going to be also, of course, some sort of focus maybe on online experiences. So maybe perhaps with people who are not able to come, you can maybe offer something that, you know, they'll be able to enjoy from the comfort of their homes. Airbnb did something similar to that. I'm not sure if you've heard, but they sort of switched.
An organization that I traveled with when I was in Israel last year, they actually did a tour from, and I was like, they invited me to be a guest speaker on a tour. And it was really cool because it was a place that I didn't go when I was in Israel, but they had those 360 cameras. I mean, and it literally was, I could point on my camera and it would just literally go further because I'm that individual that wanders on tours. But it was really good because it felt like I was able to still navigate what I wanted to do while still being in the comforts of my home.
Yeah, and honestly, it's maybe not the same experience, but it definitely is something that I think a lot of people are willing to try, especially because of what's happening. And so I think that there's definitely a market for that as well. So it'll be definitely a pool of things. I would probably say training as well is probably optimal now. So training for maybe certifications, just to, again, have maybe that label of assurance that you've maybe perhaps gotten some sort of training from an authority. So all these things probably will be made maybe priorities at this stage until the ball starts rolling, like I said.
I have to say, I love the fact that Boston has a direct flight to Dubai. And so it is the easiest trip where you go to sleep, you wake up and you are there. So I do love that it's there. The entrepreneur, although the skylines are big and people think big business, you are an entrepreneur. There is a lot of entrepreneurship that's happening. There's a lot of small shops. There's a lot of the souks that for years and for centuries, people have owned their own family businesses and generations. What would you say to an individual that had that same path as you and then decided, you know what, maybe that corporate world is not for me. I would like to go into that entrepreneurial ecosystem, but I'm afraid, I'm concerned, I don't know where to start. What would you say would be the best advice for them?
Well, I would probably say to ask, right? To ask questions, to surround yourself in an atmosphere that maybe gets you or gives you answers to the questions that you're thinking of, right? So a lot of times you'll have people saying, oh, but what if, or I don't know if I can, and you know, they'll never maybe be able to go the whole nine yards unless they actually test it in certain ways. And so I think that that's something that a lot of people are fearful of doing, but should do, because the risk is, I'd say, a lot less now than it was before, right? And I think that kind of even is maybe perhaps something that certain companies can use to their advantage, right? By being sort of the outlier or the one that stands out among the lot, they can then perhaps maybe use that to attract customers.
If you were to give that thought, so an individual decides to start their own business, they are like everything is going well. They have that situation of a pandemic happens or something happens in their industry, specifically to their industry. Give me that one advice, that one piece of advice that would say, where do they go from here? I've done everything right. I have the degrees, I have the experience, I have the certificates, I've done everything right. And again, either a pandemic or something specific to my industry happens. What do I do? because I literally left everything that I know behind to do this one thing.
So I think in such situations, you as an entrepreneur, or hopefully a would-be entrepreneur, need to think of ways that you can pivot your strategy, right? Whatever business plan that you had in mind cannot be set in stone. You need to actually be able to think of alternative ways of maybe, you know, obtaining revenue. Maybe it's to cover costs in the beginning, but at least to have something that allows you to see maybe a brighter path for your business, right? Because the second you come to that realization that, okay, this isn't working, I don't think I'm going to be able to get money from any other sort of source, I mean, that's when, you know, you might have to call it quits, right? You know, that might be the end of your entrepreneurial venture. But in this case, I think that it is so important to be honest with oneself and not to keep ideas and thoughts bottled up in one's head, right? Like, this was something that I think truly made the world of a difference with me, is that I didn't sit there and just continue to have the same conversation with myself. I had it with other people, and not just any other, you know, kind of person. It was a combination of people who may have been in similar boats or may have just had a bit more of a, I'd say, holistic kind of standpoint. They could see things from like a, I'd say, a zoomed out focus as opposed to me. And so I think just having those all together just helps any person just arrive at a conclusion in a much clearer way. I think that's how I'd suggest or recommend.
Beautiful. That's you couldn't have said it any better. So I love that. Absolutely love that. All right. So I have two more questions. Sure. Anyone that has that mindset of when they're looking, I mean, again, people, a lot of people are not adventurous. They're not, they don't have in their thought process of getting up and traveling, especially to the Middle East. What would you say to someone, anyone that is listening to you right now, that they see things in the Middle East, they only hear about the negatives, because again, the media, and I, full disclosure, I worked in the media. So, I mean, we always say, if it bleeds, it leads. So the story that gets the attention, gets the high ratings, get us to our bonus checks, will literally be that story that we're going to go with. And if it's the one that's going to scare you, that's the one that you see the most. What would you say to someone that is curious, or they just don't know, but they're curious. And then now they're looking at you, they're like, well, wow, she doesn't look like what I would imagine. How do we get more people to visit the Middle East?
Honestly, again, I think it goes back to educating them, whether it's through schools, whether it's through media, or maybe just even like alternative newer methods of communication. So a lot of people, for instance, will go through blogs or follow, let's say, a particular person, an influencer of some sort. I think that since that's the way that these trends are going, you need to act accordingly. As a country, as a tourism board, you need to be able to attract the people that you want to bring using alternative and different means. So I think that's kind of how you need to do. You need to listen to your audience and then just act accordingly. So anyone who is, you know, seeking to come, maybe a little hesitant, doesn't really know whether it's going to be safe, I say, happy to answer any questions you have. But I also understand that it might take a little more than just that one-time effort, right? It might have to be a consistent kind of thing, but I'm happy to do it. I'm pretty sure, you know, the Ministry of Tourism is as well. So it's basically, it's a collective effort.
Beautiful. All right, my last question to you. So I ask this of everyone that I speak to. If you had a personal and a professional ask, so two questions, or I'm looking for two answers, a personal and professional ask, what would be your personal ask and your professional ask of anyone that is listening to you right now?
So I would probably say that with the company itself, I've definitely gone through many, many highs and many, many lows. I'd say maybe more lows at this point. And, you know, with the business itself being still considered a startup or a younger company, I do think that there are certain topics, especially now, that become a lot more vibrant, like scalability is something that is, you know, a topic of concern. With so many limitations, I am maybe not so sure how that would be or how that would go, and would love to really just hear anyone's thoughts on how that can work out. It doesn't need to be anything detailed, just kind of, you know, ideas from maybe different industries, just to understand how different tools or different ways of doing things can maybe be utilized as well in my benefit.
And your personal?
Oh, personal. Well, I mean, I've managed to stay sane so far. Some would argue otherwise. But I would love to know, what are some of the day-to-day things that other people are doing just to get, you know, get by with every day? Whether it's maybe picking up a book, listening to a podcast. I mean, it's always just interesting or enlightening to hear how people are going about their days and getting over the situation that we have, you know, all together. So I'd just love to hear how that is working out. Maybe try something like that myself.
Beautiful. Oh, Nada, it's just nice to see you and just to hear from you. I am following the, we'll call your experiences through New Zealand, which is fantastic. And I want everyone to pay attention to that. But I think that you, I mean, you have been one of the people that I have enjoyed watching. I'm not into the influencers, but I'm definitely into the smart and innovators. You have found so many different ways to show me from here all the different aspects of not only what's happening in the EU, but also when you go on travels, you do the same thing when you go to different countries as well. And so I feel like you go out of your way to find the local stories, the local people, to find the true story. You are a storyteller in so many different ways. And I think that's one of the skills that you have that finance, oh my God, you said finance. I'm like, I don't even understand that because that's your background, but you are such a storyteller and you do it so well in such a captivating way. And I'm actually happy that you got to experience New Zealand. One, I'm happy you got to be with your sister. What a gift that was, because you would have gotten just 2 weeks and you got 6 months with with your family. But also being able to tell someone else's story. So if you were just in the EU and you're like, okay, she only knows her environment, you go in so many different directions. You're a true storyteller. And I think that's one of the things where I love the most about you. You can tell anyone's story, not just one story. You're not just one vehicle of a person. So I hope you know that and how important that is, because a lot of people thrive for those stories. And there's always that one or two persons that will want to go out there and share it. And you are it. So keep doing it. Keep doing it in every single way. And I wanted to make sure that I had you on the podcast to sit there and tell people that there's like a gem out there that you probably have never seen, never heard, but now you know her.
Oh, thank you so much. Honestly, your words really mean the world, and I feel the exact same way. It's honestly just been so nice to connect with someone who I only met once, really, in person, but for some reason, I feel like I've known, you know, for a lifetime. So hopefully when things, you know, get better and the skies are moving again, you'll definitely see me in Boston, and hopefully we'll get the chance to wander there.
Well, I can't wait to see you in Boston so I can give you the tour, but also my brother now works in Dubai. So he got a job in September. He started in September of last year. And then so he's actually in Dubai, and I'm like, and I was going to be there in November and then this happened. So next year, definitely I will be there. And I'm so excited because I'm like, oh my God, I need you to get in touch with someone I know. And so it freaked him out where he was, I mean, I have to get a license to actually be able to go to the store. And so for him, it was a whole different being in a, like he just graduated from his MBA program. He was traveling all over the world. And now he's locked down in this, like, mind you, beautiful, beautiful apartment. But it was very hard for him as well. But now he's able to go for his runs and see people and see the community. And so we're open. I can't wait to like connect you guys as well.
Oh, please do. I would definitely love to.
Oh my God, Nada, thank you. You are the best. I know you're going to go out and have fun now.
thank you so much again. Pleasure, and I hope you have a wonderful day as well.
All right, you too. Bye, my friend.
Bye.
Would you still be comfortable traveling during the pandemic or you know, wait until all this is over to embark on some solo travel?
Well, I think at this stage, I actually would be comfortable, but with many caveats. So we've seen this pandemic drag on much longer than many of us thought it would. And, you know, last year we kept on talking about 2021 like it was going to be a new year with no pandemic, right? But yeah. Guess what? It's still here. So I would still travel, but carefully. For example, I'm grateful that I'm now fully vaccinated. And this does definitely not mean that I won't get COVID. And it's not a no mask pass, but I feel considerably more comfortable than I did before. The next thing I would also do is research places that I'd be able to visit. And that list is also not so long. So places with maybe fewer cases that are open for tourism and those who take strict precautionary measures. You know, find out what the requirements are, whether it's a PCR test that you need to do in advance, or even potentially the, you know, talk about the vaccination card, which might be your new passport in some ways. I try to find out whether the country has also changed its rules one too many times, because the last thing you'd want to do is to find yourself, you know, traveling and then stuck abroad for some time. Unless it's like a place like New Zealand. I wouldn't mind getting stuck there again.
Obviously one of your favorite places.